Good morning. Welcome to episode 22 of the Driller Newscast, a weekly update on the news and stories impacting the water well and industrial drilling industry. Episode 22 is brought to you by TDH Manufacturing. TDH pump hoists are built to work as hard as you do, made with the latest technology to deliver the power and precise handling required on today's job sites. TDH will provide superior performance and unmatched versatility day in and day out. This week, the Driller team is wrapping up the final day of the South Atlantic Drilling Jubilee. Thanks for stopping by and sharing your stories with us. Go stop by TDH booth, talk to Scott, Cade, and Blake, and thank them for helping us bring the newscast. This week in the news, I want to cover a primer for the waters of the United States in the upcoming Supreme Court case of Sackett versus the EPA. It's going to happen October 3rd, 2022. Our feature is a discussion with Jeff Williams of Spafford & Sons Well Drilling. That's in Sudbury, Vermont. He's also a past NGWA president and an amazing industry knowledge broker. But before we strike into the news, let's talk about safety. For this week's safety, I want to go back and discuss lightning safety. In July, 8 Americans were killed by lightning. The total for the year is 9, 1 in June, and 8 in the past month. What is your company's lightning protocol? We all know that OSHA requires us to have a lightning policy, and often when we read that, it says utilize the 30 and 30 rule, which states when you see lightning, count the time until you hear thunder. If that is 30 seconds or less, the thunderstorm is close enough to be dangerous. We seek shelter and we wait 30 minutes. And every time we have a reoccurrence, that clock starts back again at 30 minutes. When we're counting, are you using Mississippis? Are you using potatoes? You know, we are human and we're going to make errors. And often, many of these fatalities we see on construction sites due to lightning are from restarting work too soon. So when we can hear it or see it, it's a significant danger at this point. And a storm from 10 miles out to 6 miles out and closer is 100% a hazard. So if we look at high school sports and the United States High School Sports Association, what do they look at? They say 10 miles out. You know, and again, they believe when we hear thunder, see lightning, that is within that. But do we have obstructions? Is it hard? Is there noise and traffic present and we can't hear this? So we need to utilize apps. We need to be looking at our weather. We need to be starting our day with our safety discussion and what the weather is going to be and how it can affect us today. And as we're following that and the sky gets dark, you know, storms can pop up right over top of us as well. The young man that got killed a few years ago was on the back of the rig just trying to come up off bottom and make sure they had circulation because they knew the storm was going to be long and they wanted to be able to maintain the borehole. When we know these type of things are happening and we're seeing how fast this storm is moving, we need to go to work that we know that we can shut down very quickly and seek shelter. And that's what we need to think about and understanding that, you know, this is a dangerous situation. Be safe out there. Consider your lightning policy. Consider getting the proper apps and looking at other lightning detection software that is out there. This week in the news, it's time for us all to become aware of the Supreme Court case, Sackett versus the EPA, set to be heard on October 3rd, 2022. This is the second time this case has been heard by the Supreme Court, with the first time the ruling siding with the Ninth Circuit Court's decision. The Sacketts own little over a half an acre of land near Priest Lake. This is a big 19-mile lake. It gets to 300 feet in its deepest spots in northern Idaho, a town called Priest Lake. In 2008, the Sacketts filled in some wetland on their property that impacted the Kalispell Bay Fen, a large wetland complex that drains into the creek and then into Priest Lake. As we've followed WOTUS this spring and summer, we've learned the importance of wetlands and their ability to filter out undesirable materials before reaching open bodies of water. They play an essential role in protecting the chemical, physical, and biological integrity of neighboring waterways, including filtering pollutants, storing water, and providing flood control. Right now, the EPA is defining what types of water will fall under the Clean Waters Act and the waters of the United States. However, the Sackett's case ruling could change the EPA's ability to regulate these important wetlands. The reduction of wetlands in Iowa, Nebraska, and Kansas has directly impacted the groundwater wells in that area by limiting water for recharge and moving pollutants like nitrates directly into the aquifer. Earlier this year, one of our newscasts, we covered the amount of nitrates in the dead zone that hits the Mississippi and then goes out into the Gulf. This is a big situation, and right now it's being touted as the EPA is telling a landowner that they don't have the right to build. And we will wait and see how this works. We saw the EPA versus West Virginia, and the Supreme Court sided with West Virginia just before they left for summer break. This is a very important situation, and we need to be aware of it, and we need to see how they identify these wetlands and how it should be handled properly. And I'm not saying right now that the EPA is right or the Sacketts are right, but we all need to be aware and understanding how this could get into regulating more groundwater. Welcome to the Driller Newscast, featured industry professional, or what I'd like to say, featured industry mentor, past National Groundwater President, good industry friend, and an individual that will share knowledge and inspire any individual that wants to share and geek out about the drilling industry. Jeff Williams of Spafford and Sons Well Drilling. Welcome, Jeff. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Brock.
I want to jump right into it. Jeff, why do you choose to share knowledge, thoughts, and concerns with our drilling community? As we're such a close-knit, we're worried that we're going to share a secret and something. Why do you go above and beyond to do that?
I think it's important to transfer our knowledge. Maybe I should have been a teacher at one point. I don't know, Brock. It's engaging, right? It makes me do the research to be able to talk about things that I'm not familiar with. Maybe it puts pressure on me to understand more. And I also learn so much just from the conversations. You get so much good feedback because there's no real one right way of doing something. And there's so many different ways of doing things out there. And it might be a way that you didn't consider before because most of it is technical, most of it's hands-on stuff, whether it be business or whether it be drilling applications or whatever it might be. And I really didn't understand it until I got involved at the national level. I was involved at the in the Vermont level, of course, for many, many years. And when you start to get outside of your little bubble, outside of your comfort zone, that's when you really start to learn things. That's when the world just boom opens up right wide open for you. So I think that that's been as much of the driver as anything. Maybe my quest for knowledge and my thirst for learning, and wanting to do things. My family has always have been volunteers, and we've always given back to our communities. And I just chose a larger community to give back to than my local community.
That is excellent. Did that come from the opportunity to get to travel, with the NGWA board and then as president? Did that open your eyes a little bit more?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Being able to go out and meet people on the ground in their environment, right? I did some drilling in Africa, as and that's an eye-opening experience as well. You get to experience the environment one-on-one, and traveling around our country is exactly the same way, only you've got convenience stores and grocery stores and everything else you need, and actually, electricity and water and all those things are kind of handy too. But it really was, to talk to people at a local level really increased my level of knowledge and my basis for understanding our industry and understanding our business.
So, Jeff, as an individual that presents at conferences around the country and at the NGWA show, you've always had a unique perspective or a great presentation that's got us all, on the edge of our seats from, sustainable business and buying equipment to most recently the CDL talk, which everybody had a great, great feedback from because we need to talk about it. And instead, we're just going, those darn guys. And earlier this year, we talked and you had seen a young driller on Facebook and he was an international driller. And you're thinking about recruiting him. Talk about your unique recruitment approach of hiring experienced drillers from around the world.
We started out as a like I say, as a wide-eyed kid. It's like, boom, I'm going to go get this guy and I'm going to bring him in and I'm going to be hugely successful and we're going to start a program. And we ran into several roadblocks that slowed the process down to a crawl and then ultimately brought it right to a halt. It's very difficult to hire internationally in a permanent situation. And we went to our legislators and talked to them about the same issue. And they're like, well, maybe we ought to focus on the people we got here right now. And with the immigration policies that this country has, it's a little out to lunch that you can't hire a qualified professional. There's a short list of elite professionals that can move around the world basically however, whenever they want. If you need a doctor, you need a scientist, you need an engineer. You can recruit worldwide, but in our industry, you cannot. And I think that that's a deficit. I don't know if we'll ever overcome it because we are professionals, we're licensed professionals, and I think that we deserve the same treatment as other licensed professionals. That being said, I don't think that's going to go anywhere. We reached out to Jim Smith at Fleming College. We reached out to Mississippi, down to Southwest Mississippi College, and to see if they had any recruits that would apply to our company in Vermont. And we did get some feedback from Fleming College. We got some of the students that actually interacted with us. And but most of this year's graduates had already been placed, so we're looking forward into the future. So this whole piece is going to take time to be able to find other avenues to be able to recruit people that really want to be in the drilling business. Because I think that just it looks very different from the outside than it does from the inside. And once you get into the drilling business, you sort of have to have that in your blood in order to be able to stand there day in, day out in rain, shine, wind, snow, hurricanes, tornadoes, you name it, right? You're out in it. And it takes a unique individual. So, it's hard to really find that individual without having them sort of born into blood and be able to threaten them with a stick, I guess.
You once told me a story, and it may be in one of the print editions from years ago, but you weren't born into this industry. Your father was working in it, and you went to I believe it was elementary school or career day and said something. Will you tell that story to our audience?
So that's what it was. Is it was career. It was in fourth grade. It was in Mrs. Center's class, and I'll never forget the day I was in there. And everybody got up and said, "What do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to be when you grow up?" And there were doctors and lawyers and dentists and police officers and professional firemen. And I stood up and said, "I want to be a well driller just like my father." And that was back in the fourth grade, and they laughed at me. I took that pretty serious at that point in time. And I said, I'll prove you guys wrong. So here I am 42 years later, and still in the industry and out, back out on the back of a drilling rig every day. It's I was sure about what I wanted to be. I always loved the equipment. And I loved tearing things apart. I had more stuff torn apart that I couldn't get back together that you could shake a stick at. But it's my passion. Right? And it really is, and I enjoy it. We're just getting off some deep 8-inch welds, grouted 8-inch holes for supply and injection for geothermal, and I'm the one doing them. I'm running the drill. We're doing all the work, and it's just very satisfying. So that's what I find that hands-on satisfying at the end of the day.
And I should correct myself. You were born into the industry, but you were the one that bought the company that your father worked for. and then became an owner. You were the first generation owner of the
Yeah.
company, correct?
Yep. Yeah. Dad bought it, and then eventually, the Tim and I have taken it over. But we were right on board from the first day that the Williams family owned Spafford Waterwells. So Tim and I were part of that group, my uncle as well. So it was four of us. And I'm still, I guess you could call it one and a half, generation 1.5.
I love it. Now, you just mentioned some deep injection geothermal. As we talk about needing drillers for, water well companies, you're right in the, most progressive, innovative part of our country right now, promoting net zero, green energy, Vermont, New Hampshire, New York. And
Right.
you're doing more and more geo, but you've always been diversified in geo, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I went to my first conference down in Nashville in 1995. That was Ralph Cadwalader was down there. Al Scooby was down there. Jeff Bowen was down there. That's where I first met those guys, was in 95 in Nashville. I could see it was on the horizon, and I didn't want to be the last one in. I wanted to be the first one in. And I was very successful at being the first one in, the first one to be able to get into it and do some of the drilling, and also at a real level. And then got to where I could design. I designed the residential systems, just working with HVAC guys, without engineers. We just go in and we put the systems in. I'm able to do all the calculations and be able to do head loss and BTU performance, all that stuff. So if I hadn't got started early, I wouldn't be where I am today as a part of a team on these projects, not as a a bidding contractor, as part of the team. I'm part of the design team on these big pump and reinject projects, and that makes us much more sustainable as a company.
And New York right now with Governor Hochul, they have this goal of 2,000 or 2 million homes in the next 5 years, and an average home needs 4 to 5, boreholes. That is a lot of drilling that is likely not possible in 5 years' time, but should be a just a wonderful opportunity for anybody, that's wanting to be a driller to
Right.
get into.
Right. Right. Economy of scale, I guess we call it, that as a drilling community and in Vermont as well, economy of scale means that we can have a company dedicated to just ground source heat pump work. And with the way that the rug got pulled out from underneath us when the 30% tax credit went away and we had that whole gap in funding, geothermal and ground source heat pumps, I should say, low temperature ground source heat pumps, just went off the table and really slowed down. So anybody that was really geared up to do it got the rug pulled out from underneath them. So I think that we're still cautious today on how long this little ride will last. And we're pushing at the federal level to get the 30% back for a sustainable period of time so that we can have that economy of scale, so that companies can tool up equipment specifically for ground source heat pump, closed loop drilling, and be able to go do it. We may be getting there again, but I'm still pretty cautious about really tooling up and gearing to that industry to just have the rug pulled out from us again.
Now, you mentioned being, you got in on geothermal on the ground floor and you became part of the design team. And this is something I encourage with all of us as drilling professionals to not just be a bidder, not just be, okay, these are the specifications I got. I should just all, if those guys want to do it that way, I'll do it that way. Can you speak about, being the expert in the room when it comes to the drilling aspect and bringing your knowledge? Because so often as an industry, we go, we're just the drillers. Those are the scientists, those are the engineers, but we're not.
I think there's a difference between being a drilling contractor and being a full service provider. The the full service provider gets in on the ground floor and works with a team. Being a drilling contractor, you're fighting against a team, so to speak, right? You get in on the job and you say, well, this isn't going to work, or that isn't going to work, or this isn't going to work. Where if you're part of the design team, you have that input early on so that when you get to the job site, right, you're ready to go. Everything is laid out because you had input in the process. So that it's much easier to perform my job. You get more freedom to be able to do your job and make decisions without having to go up a decision tree and wait for 2 days for everybody to have meetings on things. I can shoot off a text or an email right off the platform as things are unfolding, and we can just move right along through these projects. I don't stop anymore. I don't shut down the rig anymore. When we get on the job, we just go. If I run into something a little different, I just shoot right off an email or I shoot off a text. The hydrogeologist and I have been working, you know, hand in hand daily. We're talking about strategies for, you know, getting the water and getting it back in the ground and supplying it to the building in the most efficient way for our customer. May not be the cheapest way, may not be the most expensive way, but we're looking at longevity and we're looking at return on investment for our client. And our client now is the owner. It's not the general contractor. Our client is the owner. So it's sort of a different mindset, and it gives you a lot more freedom. And I work very well, I think, with engineers and hydrogeologists and those. We work as a team. Instead of working against a team, you're working with a team. I think there's a lot to be said for that.
Does that allow you to bid at the value that you need for your company to be sustainable?
It does. It allows me to put numbers in that are real numbers that we can go out and we can do the job. And, you know, we can hopefully stay within those numbers. There's always that pressure, right? But that's pressure we need to be able to stay within our bid numbers and pull this project off and bring it in on budget, because we're now basically working for the owner. And you have to have their respect. And so it means that you've got to do what's right, even when you don't think anybody else is looking.
How are you dealing with the fuel upcharge right now as a company that has projects you've bid 3, 4, 5 months ago and things that take a life cycle, and now we're at, you know, it's $5 plus a gallon here in the Midwest. I don't know what it is up in Vermont right now. But any advice or any secret you want to give?
We put on a fuel surcharge, and customers that had drilling prices that were less than what are profitable, when we got on the phone and we've talked with them and said, you know, fuel went up in the last 30 days. You know, it's costing us some, $3.25 to $3.50 a foot just in fuel costs to drill. And that's double what it was. So you take $1.75 off the table, and that's 10%, or somewhere, you know, between 6 and 10% of what your drilling costs are. And you can't stand that because there's not that much profit in it. So we've had to contact our customers and say, we've got to put on a fuel surcharge. And that's what we did. We put on a fuel surcharge. And as soon as I saw fuel start to move, I revised estimates and resent them. Excuse me, Brock. And then we increased pricing. So hopefully at some point we just get rid of the fuel surcharge and the prices are what the prices are at that point. I think that we've done it fairly successfully. It's really tough when it moves as fast as it does, and everything moves as fast as it does, to keep up with it. But we've really worked hard to try to keep up with all these increasing costs.
It is a difficult time when we're such a consumer-based, you know, society. And so if I walk into the Ford dealership right now, and though it's, you know, 9 months for me to get an F-150, if I was to put all my money down, you know, that's the price of the F-150. But we do a bad job of advocating to our customers that, you know, Ford is a billion-dollar behemoth, and they have a different supply chain and a different thing than we do as a family-owned business.
Yeah, it's really, really tough. And I'm really glad I did not buy into the just-in-time inventory craze that was all across this nation. I've never bought into that. I like to look at it. I'd rather be looking at it than looking for it. And our inventories were absolutely robust. I put another $200,000 on the shelf before the end of the year. And we have been maintaining. We are now starting to thin out a little bit of that inventory because supply chain issues in some areas are starting to ease up. In other areas, they're getting worse. But in some of the areas, I'm able to thin out some of that inventory and turn it back to cash and get back to regular inventory levels. So that's our goal for now, especially like in the fractional horsepower pump market. We can thin those down a little bit because my suppliers have assured me that they've got plenty of inventory. So let's take some of that. So the HDPE crisis that we're in now and the PVC crisis we're in, well, I've got several thousand feet of PVC underground in different sizes. And the HDPE market is the one now where we're having the real crunch. So we got to pre-order a whole bunch of that stuff and have it on the ground if we're going to finish these projects. Right now, we're what, 10, 8 to 10, 12 weeks out on 4-inch and 6-inch DR11. And, so we're going to have to be planning and thinking ahead to make sure that we've got in stock for the projects we know we have. And if we think we're going to need some extra, better make sure you got it. Don't be a stick or two short, right? So you're going to have to put a little money over there to protect yourself because you know you're not going to be able to turn around and get another 40 or 60 feet of 6-inch DR11 next week. It's going to be another 10 to 12 weeks, and the minimum order might be 400 feet. So you better make sure that you got enough in stock to be able to do the job.
Last question. You are a busy man, so I catch you when I can. And right now it's the busiest time of summer. It's right after 4th of July, and you're in Maine enjoying some time with your wife. We as an industry don't get that. We often talk about, the last time I had a vacation was 2007, or it's when the blizzard hits, or those type of things. What's the secret?
You got to make time, and I'm not that good at it. If it wasn't for a whole bunch of pressure from my wife, I would just be getting to Maine today, probably. I worked last Saturday, 4th of July weekend. I went out and drilled Saturday, and that allowed me the comfort level to take off on Wednesday. But at the same time, if we don't take a few minutes and spend with our family, I just turned 60 years old, and it's been 42 years in this. And I missed a lot of things because work took precedence. Now you still have to be dedicated to your work, but at some point there's an over dedication to that side of it. And so there's a deficit on the family side. Grandchildren are getting older and we want to enjoy our grandchildren before they go off to college and do their thing. And so we're going to have to focus on that a little bit. So it's all about focus. It's all about focus and making time for the things that are important.
That is great advice that we all need to do a better job with. With that, I want to thank you. It's always great to get to visit with you, and the way you share knowledge, and you 100% help inspire this next generation coming in because they can see the big scope of what the industry has for opportunities, from diversifying to in fourth grade, going, I'm going to be a wa water well driller. You all watch out. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks, Brock, for having me on. It's always great talking with you also.
This wraps episode 22 of the Driller Newscast, brought to you by TDH Manufacturing. Every vision and feature that TDH has engineered is with one goal in mind: to enable the contractor to increase their revenue simply because their pump hoist is more efficient. If you're listening to this on August 1st, and you're down in Myrtle Beach, stop by the TDH booth. Thank them for helping us bring the news again this week and check out all the great innovations. Scott owned a drilling company and was pulling pumps before he moved down to Texas and started TDH with those great innovations. Thank you for stopping by the driller booth and Next week, we'll have all sorts of great interviews and discussions directly from the Jubilee, and I hope it causes you to have a little bit of FOMO if you didn't make it out this year. Thank you to Jeff Williams for sharing his industry knowledge this week. You see him at NGWA, stop him, shake his hand, and say, thanks for all you do, Jeff. Finally, we got to consider our lightning policy and how our teams are interacting with extreme weather in the field. 9 people this year, 8 being men, 1 lady. It's a sad situation. There was a soldier killed with 9 other injured in a training exercise in Georgia. We have to respect what's happening with this extreme weather and use the right technologies so that we're aware of these dangers, no different than what's happening on the rig or when we're pulling pumps. Be safe. Thank you.